Hello, lacrosse friends. Welcome once again to Box the Beat on NLL Radio, also available on iTunes via Inside Lacrosse Podcasts. I am Stephen Stamp, your host and an editor at ilindoor.com, where you can go for the best of lacrosse coverage. This week, a couple of great guests. I speak with Reggie Thorpe, the GM and head coach of the New York Riptide, who just had their name and branding announced over the weekend. We talk about the expectations for an expansion team, given how San Diego and Philadelphia have fared this year in their expansion season. We also talk about Reggie's U.S. team for the 2019 World Indoor Lacrosse Championships, where he is the head coach, and about going back to Rochester to be part of the John Grant Jr. Jersey retirement ceremony. Then I'm joined by Nick Rose, Toronto Rock goaltender. We talk about the role that the Rock are on, how they plan to keep it going into the second season. And we also talk about how things have changed now that Brandon Miller, who was his teammate for several years, is now his goalie coach. And a little bit about the angst surrounding Nick Rose's Pittsburgh Steelers. All that and more here on Box the Beat on NLL Radio.
This call is being recorded.
Joining me on Box the Beat is the head coach and general manager of the New York Riptide, Reggie Thorpe. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. Excited.
It's good to talk to you. It's been a while since you were this directly involved in the National Lacrosse League. What was your last direct involvement with the club?
2009, when general manager with the Rochester Nighthawks there, the 2008-09 season there. But yeah, I'm excited. You know, it's, you know, I love the way the NLL is moving and the direction they're moving, and the different ownership groups and the expansion and the growth. And it's an exciting time to be part of the NLL.
The big announcement on the weekend, the Riptide introduced as the name. And it's interesting because I think most of the teams that have come out, I mean, the you know, all the teams that have come out lately, it seems like the names have leaked out a little earlier. I think a lot of us try to respect that it's, you know, let the team announce their name, but they seem to slip out. The Seals came out a bit early. I think the Thunderbirds in Halifax a little bit early, but I didn't hear anybody saying Riptide until it came out on Sunday.
Yeah, it was pretty quiet. You know, like I said, we went out to the fans and got their opinions and went back and forth. And it was really neat to get the community involved and get their perspective and opinions and ideas and kind of take that and mix it all together and go back to them and then finalize it. And it was pretty cool.
And it's force of nature nicknames have become a little more popular, you know, since the days like the Carolina Hurricanes and obviously the Miami Heat, different things. But Riptide is pretty cool because it's the kind of thing you might not think of right away, but if you've ever felt a Riptide, it's really something, and you see it. So it kind of captures what you want from a lacrosse team. Is that how you plan to build the team? Be Riptide-ish?
We hope so. You know, obviously, you know, we want to build a strong team, obviously, you know, and that's going to be hard work and blue collar and really be part of the community, you know, something that the community can wrap their arms around and be part of, and something our team can be part of the community. So we're excited to, you know, take the next steps in the process of, you know, getting to the expansion draft and free agency and eventually the entry draft.
You talked about the community, and obviously New York has had teams before. It's also fertile ground for lacrosse. There's a lot of lacrosse going on in the area. How do you see that playing into the development of this team? Obviously, you said you guys have been reaching out already to the community and building a base.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's it's a huge, you know, lacrosse community with, you know, certainly rich in tradition, right? Years and years. So and we have a lot of great people down there and center of influences, former, you know, NLL players, former MILL players, MLL, you know, So we have some great relationships down there in the community, and we really want to build on those and make them part of our team.
Your background is a little unusual in some ways. You spent 15 seasons with the Nighthawks. You were the captain of championship teams in 97 and 07. You mentioned you're the GM in 09 and 08, I believe. But you're also playing at the time. So that's a very unusual situation for a player to be a GM as well. You hear the odd GM, player coach, but what was that situation like for you, and how do you think it prepares you for your new role here?
You know, back then, I mean, we had a lot of injuries that season, you know, and I mean, that's why I ended up, you know, playing and be a player GM. And I believe Dave Huntley actually did that. You know, everyone okay. said I was the first one, but I heard that Dave Huntley did that back in the day there. But it was really just, you know, kind of forced on through. We had a rash of injuries that month, and we were scrambling for players, and I was fresh out of playing, so signed myself. But yeah, you know, it was a great experience. I mean, guys you play with and respect, you know. So it was a pretty smooth transition.
How'd the negotiation go when you were signing yourself?
I was underpaid.
Wow, you should have been harder. You should have struck a harder bargain. You knew your weak points.
Kurt's smarter than that.
So, again, you've won a couple of championships with the Nighthawks. You're a big part of a very strong culture there. So that's, I'm sure, something you're going to bring in to your role here with the Riptide. A little different approach when you're with an expansion team. But you look at the way the teams have been built through the years. And this year, of course, San Diego being very successful. Philadelphia, competitive. They've only won a couple of games, but they have been a very hard team to play against. So there's a bit of a precedent at this point for expansion teams to put together a competitive club pretty quickly. Is that, do you feel that expectation, and do you feel like that's reasonable to expect?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I mean, obviously the expansion rules are much different than they were years ago, where, you know, most of the organizations would protect most of their front door players and their goalies and leave the D guys hanging. And I don't think in my 15 years, I don't think I ever got protected, you know? So now the expansion rules certainly are different. They can only protect, you know, X amount of forwards and X amount of defenders. So it certainly gives an opportunity for expansion team. You know, if you can do your homework and be competitive out of the gate, much like I said, San Diego's doing, they're sitting at 4-4 in a playoff spot. In Philadelphia, you know, they're 2-8 or 2-7, but I mean, they're battling every game, and they're a few goals away from being 4-4 themselves, you know. So, you know, or you know, or 5-5, you know. So, it's certainly a much better opportunity for an expansion team now to have some success early on. But it's certainly, like I said, these clubs are good, and the margin of victory in the league this year is it's really great to see. I mean, you take a night off and anyone can beat anyone, you know, so it's super competitive.
And I believe I've heard that the rules are going to be the same for this expansion draft. Teams can protect 10 play runners in a goalie or 11 runners, but a maximum of 5 forwards. Is that what you've heard?
Yeah, I mean, we just getting with Brian Lemon and getting our GM, you know, kind of the book or the paperwork, and seeing what we have for free agency and ages in there. So just really starting to dig in and then dive into all that. But it's got to be that type of format for sure. And yeah, like I said, it gives an expansion team, us in Halifax, a good great opportunity to pick some guys off these rosters that are pretty darn good.
Another element of building a team, of course, is building a coaching staff. You've added Lance Bassler as a assistant GM, but how or what kind of timeline do you see for adding assistant coaches, and how do you go about that search? You obviously have a lot of connections in the lacrosse community.
Yeah, we're just starting to work on that. You know, we wanted to get Lance in place. You know, he's got a really strong background in the operations and kind of AGM role with US Lacrosse that he did. So he's really going to be a big asset for us, in market guy. And the next step is really, you know, just developing our coaching staff and scouts and stuff like that. So you know, we're excited about that. We're starting to take the next steps, but probably like a mid March time frame, end of March, we'll have the staff in place there. And obviously there might be a person or two who's currently under contract, so we got to certainly respect that, you know, until the end of the season, and respect their season and the club. We don't want to disrupt anything in the locker room with if we're looking at anyone there. So you know, so we'll have a good amount of staff probably by mid March, end of March, and you know, probably the rest by the after the conclusion of the season.
Right. Now, speaking of people under contract, I know you can't say a lot about, say, Tom Schreiber specifically, but he strikes me, I mentioned that New York is fertile ground. He's from that area. And it strikes me that, you know, if the Riptide had existed a few years ago, because it kind of came out of left field when the Toronto Rock signed Schreiber, and what an immediate impact he had. He was one of the best players in the league right away, rookie of the year and MVP contender last year till he was hurt. It seems like had the Riptide existed, Schreiber and other players in similar situations might have had an easier route or a more likely route to get into the league close to home. And something like that, you know, and finding other players like that would be huge for you guys to get some local talent.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, I think, you know, Tommy's a great success story for Americans, you know, and I think Brody Merrill referred a couple of the American guys up there to the organization, and they picked them. But that's all. Like I said, it's great having a great network of people out there that are looking at some American players and college and post college that want to play box lacrosse. And obviously, being involved with my U.S. Indoor team has been helpful to really get to know the guys and build that network and to be, you know, some players that want to play. So we're excited. You know, Tommy's under contract with Toronto for a few years, so you know, we're not looking in, obviously, you know, nothing with that, but there's a lot of good Americans out there, and we're going to certainly leave no stone unturned when we're trying to find some players.
I must say, you're like a dream guest for a podcast host, because I've got a bunch of notes of things that I want to get to and places I want to go with the conversation, and you keep leading into them. I was going to ask about, you know, how you're a busy guy. You're coaching the Syracuse field women's field team with Gary Gate. And of course, as you referred to, you're the head coach for Team USA for the 2019 World Championships. And that has a lot on your plate for you to manage.
Yeah, it's good. It's just, it's coaching, right? You know, you never work a day in your life. So it's, you know, I love what I do, you know, and I'm very, very fortunate and grateful to do that. I'm also the chief lacrosse officer for 3D, you know, 3D lacrosse out of Denver, Colorado. So do a lot with that organization. So certainly busy, but it's lacrosse. It's what I do. It's what I love, and very supportive with my family and my kids and wife. So, it's pretty busy, but, you know, certainly get time to get it all done. And, it's nice going to work and having the opportunity to do that.
I want to speak a little bit about the U.S. team, because I think when you look at the roster as it comes together, I know you're down to somewhere in the 20s. You've made some cuts after the last night. You cut to 32, I believe. Looking at the offense, the potential for that team is fairly unprecedented, I would think, or possibly anyway, with Schreiber and Joe Rizzitarits, who actually last year became the first American to score 100 points in an NLL season. You got Blaze Reardon, who's a real up-and-comer, Kieran McArdle, and youngsters like Connor Fields to come once he's fully healthy. It has the makings of one of the more explosive U.S. offensive sets that we've seen, I believe.
Yeah, no, we're excited. You know, we've got a good number of guys, you know, playing in the NLL. We got a few guys on practice rosters and a few guys bumping in and out of lineups. So it's certainly exciting from our coaching staff perspective and organization with U.S. Lacrosse Indoor to where we can go. And we got some goalies too that are playing the ALL, you know, getting some minutes there, seeing lots of rubber, you know. So, you know, we don't have any goalies in the NLL currently on rosters, but we have a couple kind of in the farm system working hard, and, you know, we're excited about that. I mean, shots are shots. So, you know, they're seeing some good quality shots, and there's some really good players in that ALL. So, yeah, we're excited top to bottom. You know, we feel we're going to have solid, you know, offensive side, Odor, and then we got some really, really, really good, you know, thumpers on D and some tranny guys. So we're excited about that. It's obviously, I mean, we're chasing Cannon and the Iroquois, you know, and you know, they're really, really good. So
yeah,
and the bottom half's coming up, you know. I mean, you know, Israel, England, and Ireland, they're all getting better. So, you know, we certainly chasing Canada and the Iroquois, but that bottom's really, really coming up too. So we're gonna have our hands full, but we're excited for the challenge.
Yeah, you really do. I mean, obviously you're looking at the teams above you, and Canada is going to be great again. The Iroquois, I think, may have their best team in quite a while. And but you do have to be aware of the Israel and Czechs and England and Australians, who are always going to battle. I find looking at your roster, the offense, very exciting. The defense, I find quite fascinating. I was there at the Lasny in Onondaga in September, where you had everyone trying out for Team USA for the Worlds this year, was there and split between teams blue and white, USA blue and USA white. And what stood out to me for the defenders, very athletic group, but just how big they are. There was a lot of just big guys. Watching you guys warm up and watching like at the LaxCon when you had some practices and that, it's just a huge group of humans.
Yeah, we got some great size back there, and they're pretty athletic. Like I said, we're excited. Like I said, we got some good thumpers back there that have some size and are physical, and you're gonna need that. And then we got some guys that, you know, got size and speed too there. So I mean, and we're gonna have our hands full. You know, we're gonna, you know, it's gonna be some tough decisions coming down the line on the with the guys. We're down to 32 now, and we're gonna cut down to 23 at the end of May. So there's going to be some tough decisions. I mean, we got some really good guys and a lot of guys that are playing well. So, but yeah, we got some good size, and that's what we're excited about. And you need it versus top teams.
Mm-hmm. The other thing with the defensive group, I mean, you've got some veteran U.S. leaders like Brett Manny and Greg Downing, and, you know, some guys who have definitely been a part of teams and have that experience playing in the NLL. But you also have a couple of guys, Ethan O'Connor and Taylor Stewart, who are Canadians living in the U.S. And have become eligible to play for you internationally. And watching them, like, what a huge factor those guys were, just their experience and playmaking ability in the Lasny, certainly. How important are guys like that to helping kind of bring up the overall ability level of that defensive group?
Oh, huge. You know, I mean, Ethan's, you know, won a championship when he's in Georgia there, and now he's in Buffalo having a really good year for them. And, you know, Taylor's out in Colorado and having another good year, you know, he's great off the floor, getting the ball off the floor. Both of them are, you know, and, you know, Taylor's, you know, pretty good in transition too there, but they bring a lot of experience and some good leadership to our locker room, you know, so we're really excited about those guys. And I thought they really meshed well with our guys. So it was, they're really good locker room guys. And I think that's obviously, one of our key focuses.
It was interesting watching you guys play at the Lasny, very competitive. You got some really competitive lacrosse the further you got into the tournament, obviously. And I thought, one thing, you had a bunch of forwards injured. So you had, or unavailable. So you had some of the defenders playing up, and I see such a back and forth process for Taylor Stewart, who'd been a pretty good player in Colorado. I thought he just took a huge step in the Lasny, playing offense and showing certainly better hands than I had ever realized he had. And then also carrying that over to transition. And to me, that's really carried over. I think he's having a great season in Colorado. He's been one of the most improved players in the league. And it's interesting to see how an opportunity like playing with you guys and getting some of those chances up front seems to have really helped him in his pro game.
Yeah, I think he's playing well. You know, obviously, you know, he's pretty versatile guy that can play, you know, can play that D tranny role and play a few shifts up on offense there and in defense. You know, certainly not a huge guy, but much like Greg Downing, plays pretty big for his size.
Yeah, I'm a big Greg Downing fan as well. I think that was a bit of an under-the-radar signing in New England when there was so much going on trying to sort out the CBA, and Downing came on board. And I know they're thrilled to have him there. And, you know, another, again, one of those experienced Americans who you don't think of when you look at him as a player. You don't think, oh, American guy. You just think he can play. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Greg's a good one, you know. And I was watching the game on Sunday, coming back from New York, and I saw Brett Manning had his first goal, and then Greg snuck one in there too there. So for them, and they had a big weekend. You know, it was a big win for New England there to get rolling again. So yeah. Greg's, like I said, he's been awesome. He's a veteran. He's got a lot of years from upstate New York, you know, town next to me. So watched him my whole career, and we're really excited to him to have another opportunity at you know, at these World Games.
Going back to the NLL, speaking of going back, you were in Rochester for the John Grant Jr. jersey retirement ceremony. And I have a fun fact for you because I was doing a little research. And you scored 76 points in your NLL career, which is one more than John Grant Jr.'s lowest total for a full season in his NLL career. I'm just joking. I mean, you scored 76 more points than I have in the NLL. But that must have been fun to get back and be part of that and see a bunch of the guys from back in some championship years.
Yeah, it was quite the gap in scoring. You know, I had five career goals, and Junior had a gazillion. You know, so no, it was great to represent the Nighthawk Nation and the alumni in Rochester, to be able to introduce you know John, who's, you know, certainly more deserving than anyone to be the first player to have his jersey in those rafters. You know, I mean, the guy's he's done it all, you know, and he's peak performed, you know, for a gazillion years. And I think people, you know, forget about how good he was in the NCAA, being a, you know, being a you know, attackman of the year, you know, back in Delaware and that. So, I mean, he had a lot of success, you know, obviously in the you know, major, you know, the Canadian box, the CLA and NLL, MLL, you know, and obviously the NCAA. So no, it was exciting to go back there to see Rochester, and to for his wife and daughter to be there to see his jersey go in the rafters. It was certainly special.
I know Reagan, his wife, and Gabby, their daughter, have been huge fans, obviously. And I mean, Gabby's gotten involved in her sports. She's done some cheerleading stuff in that, I think, with out in Denver. And I think there may be a chance she's going to pick up a lacrosse stick at some point as well. But it is fun when you get to have for John and Reagan. Gabby is like eight now, eight or so. She's grown up watching him, so for her to, so many guys talk about, you know, when their kids are young, they don't really get a chance to see them playing. So Gabby did get a chance to see him towards the end of his career, but it's got to be big for the kids when they see how much people respect and adore their parent, you know, their parents as players, and what they've brought to the game when they're a little older.
Yeah, you know, obviously, you know, it was she, her being there, I think she had a big smile on her face the whole time. She was super excited for her dad there, and Rochester loves John. You know, he said he had a lot of years there and with his family. So you know, and then, you know, John grew up, you know, going to the rink with his father, you know, John Grant Sr., you know. So to have his daughter there, I'm sure you know, brought back some good memories.
So moving forward, what's the timeline for you? Obviously, you've got your Syracuse stuff going on. You've got your USA stuff. You said you're working down with the bringing the team to 23 in a couple of months. But what's the process moving forward with the Riptide now?
We're just, like I said, just working on you know, our staff and getting our right pieces of the puzzle in place there. And then, you know, really our focus is really going to be on obviously the expansion draft and free agency, because that would be the, you know, the those are the next steps, you know, come July. So really just organizing that and really keeping a good pulse on the rosters and, you know, ages and free agency and free agents, or, you know, and salary cap, just really getting into all that stuff here over the next, you know, next couple of months.
Well, I'm going to let you back to work, because I know you do have a lot to do. And really appreciate you coming on. It's always a pleasure to chat. And especially, I know we're both feeling a little under the weather. So I'm glad we're able to get through it without too many coughing fits. And I hope you feel better, and appreciate your time.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Joining me on Box the Beat from the 7-1 Toronto Rock, goaltender Nick Rose. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Samper, how's it going?
Not too bad, not too bad. So it's interesting. You look at it, and obviously the Rock playing very well. You guys are off to a 7-1 start, an excellent start to the season. But I know that the message from Matt Sawyer and Jamie Dalek and your leadership group will be, hey, we haven't done anything yet. Let's keep going. We've got a long way to go. And I was just looking at the standings in the East. Everyone talks about how close the league is, how much parity, how close every team is from every other one. And you guys are 4-1 in one goal games. Philadelphia is 1-2 in one goal games, including a pair of losses to you guys. 1-5 in one or two goal games. If those happen to reverse, I know that's a number of changes, but if those records were the other way around, all of a sudden you guys are 4-4, Philly is 6-4, and everything looks very different. And there's a reason why you guys won a lot of those games, but they still, a lot of close games, a lot left to do, I guess, this season.
Yeah, there's obviously a ton of parity in the NHL, and that's kind of what makes the NHL so great, is that anybody can win on any given weekend, and you have to be prepared. You have to come and play hard and execute what you've worked on all week. So we've been, I guess, fortunate enough to find ways to win those one goal games, and we do recognize that we haven't really done anything yet. We're just approaching the halfway mark of the season, and there's a lot of games to be played still yet. So we have to make sure we keep doing what we've been doing, but not kind of taking the foot off the gas pedal.
And I mean, as much as we can say, oh, it could be this, it could be that, the reality is you're 7-1. You have found those ways to win, and a lot of positives going on with the team. What do you think has been clicking for you guys? And obviously part of it is experience and working together as a group, but what have you been noticing in those games that has allowed you to pull out the wins?
Yeah, I just think we've done a good job of sticking with it. I mean, even when other teams have gone on runs, we've actually done a pretty good job overall of not giving up runs that we can't overcome. We've been able to, I think, be pretty disciplined for the most part. I mean, we have had a few games where we've taken some tough penalties at tough times, like our last game in San Diego. But overall, I think we've been a pretty disciplined team, and that's paid off in big moments for us.
Quite a finish to that last game against San Diego. We're coming off the week before. They had a roughing the goalie call that when you watch it, you know, it's such a difficult call for the refs because everything's happening so fast. A guy comes flying in. I think in that case, when you watch it, Jules Hennenberg got a push in the back and on the upper back and kind of goes into Frank Chiliano into Eric Penny, and he gets tossed out of the game, gets a 5 in a game, which was later reduced to just a major. In this game, Adam Jones is going to the net and winds up going into Chiliano and gets a major. And what a position. And, you know, however you feel about the call, and again, they are really tough, but what a position to put you guys in up by a goal. All of a sudden you're shorthanded for the final few minutes of the game, final 2.5 minutes. And if they had tied it up, which they almost did, you go to overtime shorthanded.
Yeah. I mean, obviously that situation against San Diego wasn't the most ideal. And I think as far as the call goes, I do think that as a goalie, I obviously want them to protect the goalies in each and every game. And I do think that that maybe should have been a penalty, but I do think that we have to get a bit more consistent with what's a 5-minute major on goalie interference and what's not. Cause I had one a few weeks ago out in Philly, and I kind of felt like it was pretty bad where I didn't really have an opportunity to get out of the way, and it was only a 2-minute penalty, and it's just a bit of inconsistency. But I mean, it is a extremely tough call for the refs to make with how fast the play goes and how quick they have to make a decision. So I do understand the difficulty of that at times, but Yeah, I mean, it probably should have been a penalty, but I'm just glad that we were able to kill off that last 2.5 minutes, or just that the clock ran out, because, yeah, it obviously wasn't a good situation. If we had given up a goal heading into overtime, being short man, it could have gone a lot different. So I'm just glad that clock ran out.
Down the stretch, San Diego had some chances. The big one that we all saw, Dan Dawson cuts through some traffic, gets a shot on you with just a handful of seconds left, gets what will be the last shot of the game, and you make a save, big save as he goes low on a shot that, and a play where Dan Dawson has scored a lot of goals in his career at a lot of big times, and you were pretty fired up. You came out, you're kind of giving a pretty good celebration as the clock had expired, and I mean, normally you and so many goalies are pretty chill, kind of back there. You can't get too fired up all the time because the nature of being a goalie, of course, you're going to give up goals. You're going to have, you know, there are going to be times in the game where you need to be able to forget it and move on. But that was a pretty big moment, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, Dawes had a pretty good look. I didn't really see the stick. He was able to reach around one of our defenders, and I just kind of took a lucky guess that he was going to try and put it a bit lower in the net, and I went down, and he ended up hitting me. But I think that was more just I obviously with the being shorthanded for the last 2.5 minutes, I knew how kind of up against it we were, and to kind of come out of that a little unscathed. I think yeah, just kind of that cheer or whatever was just letting out some energy and some happiness that didn't kind of come back to bite us. So that's all that was. But yeah, you're right. I mean, most of the time, I think a lot of the goalies in NHL kind of are a lot more chill than that, I guess.
It would be tough to play that way. If, I mean, you see guys when they score get excited all the time. But I mean, the reality is if you score 3 goals in a game, that's really good. Guys will score more, but you know, that's huge. But in some of the best games you'll see goalies play, you might still give up 7, 8, 9 goals, even on a great game. So if you were, I guess, riding the emotional wave with all your goals and saves, it might be tough to just keep performing. You get a little ragged emotionally.
Yeah, I mean, that's just kind of how goalies have to be. They have to be calm and collected. And I just think it was just the nature of how that game went. It was a tight game from start to finish, and emotions were running a little high. Just having some kind of former teammates and guys that I respect back competing against us. So I just think for us to come out on the top end of that, it was just more of a relief moment in that last few seconds.
When you're in that situation where you're facing, obviously, I mean, the entire coaching staff were guys that you'd played with in Patrick Merrill and Bill Greer and did his name escape my mind for the moment?
Shooter?
Josh Sanders. Yeah. Only a legendary Hall of Famer. You know, you're facing those guys and some players who are coming back. Pretty 7 players and coaches on their team that had been members of The Rock by Matt Sawyer's count talking during the game. Is there anything you need to do differently in that situation? I mean, I know you're going to approach things as much as you can the same way as always, and Matt Sawyer is big on focusing on your own game as opposed to the opponent's game, but it's almost like there's a reality that there's going to be some emotion and some focus on that from everybody. Do you approach it any different?
No, I do think that heading into last week, we did approach it as just another game against an opponent we've never seen before, but we had to just kind of prepare how we've been preparing each and every week. And obviously there's some that goes into it as far as, like their coaching staff obviously knows a lot about our players and kind of our team. And I'm sure that they use that in their scouting all week and preparation. But at the same time, we know a lot about all those guys as well. So, I mean, I think it was just kind of one of those situations that happen quite often in the NHL against former teammates, and it was just kind of one of those things where go give it all and hope you come out on the right end of it, and we were able to, but they certainly didn't make it easy on us, and they got a good team, and they're going to make some noise yet in the West. So, yeah, I was real happy to get to come out of that one with a win, obviously.
I'm curious, kind of shifting gears a bit, there's such a tight battle for the scoring lead on the Rock. Tom Schreiber with 47 points, including 16 goals. Rob Hellier has 46 with 18 goals. Adam Jones has 18 goals, a few less assists, but a bunch of snipers. And I'm curious, with those guys and all the other players, in practice, who gives you the most trouble? Is it one of those three or somebody else? Is it like some D guy that you find the hardest?
Yeah, that's a pretty good question. I think all those guys are obviously potent scorers, and they certainly all get their fair share in practice as well. But I don't know. It's a tough decision putting me on the spot here, Stamper. But we do have some transition guys that are very skilled. Obviously, Challen's extremely tough to stop in games or in practices, and I put him right up there. But all three of those guys up front, even Dan Craig has a really tough shot. Lintner when he gets in tight. So, I would like to say I could pinpoint one of them, but yeah, practices aren't always the most fun out here at the track.
With the being at the track, and of course you work there, you're there today, you've got the full-time job. What's your title at the track?
I'm the general manager of the facility.
So obviously a big responsibility running a fantastic facility that has been such a boon to the lacrosse community since Jamie Dalek had that built. It's been a few years now. And what does that entail, your role with the general manager's position at the Toronto Rock Athletic Center?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's a pretty unique situation, probably one of the more unique in the league. I'm in charge of making sure all the bookings are looked after, everything's ready to go for anybody that kind of comes through the doors here. And I also got the opportunity to work with Colin Doyle and Challen now kind of in that role as well. With Colin, they're setting up all of our in-house programming and teams and all that. So we all kind of work hand in hand and share the same vision as what Jamie wants this place to be and how we want to essentially help grow the game in the area. And it's been a blast working with all those guys. And I've been here since day one of the doors being open. And it's probably been, I'd have to say, the best part of my life the last 6 or 7 years has been kind of being involved in this facility.
I actually had the chance to play a game there before I think it was officially open. I know the Jamie invited and the team invited the Rock Roadies, who had been the strong playing group for a long time, to come and play a Masters game, basically, just before this facility officially opened, to kind of break in the turf. And they invited me to come along, and it was unbelievable to get in there. I mean, if anyone hasn't been there, well, a lot of people obviously haven't had a chance to get there, but if you ever get a chance to see it, it's such a great facility, great turf, which is down all the time, so it's not getting rolled up. It's in perfect, perfectly flat all the time, and it's such a, like you said, a unique facility that gives you guys a great opportunity. First of all, for everyone to have somewhere to go and train, it's more like an NFL facility, and with the team having its own spot, everyone really has access to go and work out and do things that they need to do to prepare.
Yeah, it's very unique to the NLL, and I think it would be awesome if more NLL teams looked at doing something like this in the area, because I do think it's really boosted lacrosse in not only Oakville, but definitely in Ontario as well. And we posted many final week or like provincials and the junior NLL tournament. If you've ever been to that, that's probably one of the most top-notch weekends some kids around here have ever had. And I think it's, this facility's kind of helped boost all of that. And it would be great for more teams to hop on board, I guess.
Yeah, the junior NLL, I know, has really been a growing concern. Kids really getting excited. Also, the Rock Elite League that you run out of that facility. I understand, or I heard that Cam Holding, who is a Whippy area guy, he's been living in, his family moved to Grand Rapids, Michigan. He was coaching Michigan State, playing for the Seals now. I heard that he brought in a bunch of kids from his programs in Michigan who were going to play against some of the Rock Elite League teams after you guys had played the Seals on the weekend. How'd that go?
Yeah, that was awesome. He obviously, with him being in town Friday night against us down at Scotiabank Arena, he started his own club team out in Michigan when he, I believe he was the head coach at Michigan State. So he started a club team, and he ended up bringing them all up for the weekend. And I know that they got a day of camp in on Friday at Scotiabank Arena with Colin Doyle. He put them through the paces, and then obviously they all went to the game, got a great experience there. And then Saturday here at the track, we put together our own kind of in-house Rock Elite select teams from Pee Wee, Bantam, Midget, and our junior divisions. And they all competed against Cam's teams two games each. And it was great lacrosse. They got a lot of skilled players, and a lot of them haven't had much experience in the box game, but they picked it up pretty quickly, in my opinion, and some incredible goals. I don't know if you saw that one reverse backhand diving goal, but they definitely have some guys or some players there that, that know what they're doing. And it was a great day, to be honest with you. And I think Cam was happy, and I know that we were extremely happy with how it went on our end.
I haven't had a chance to see that goal. I have to go back, and I assume it's on the Rock Twitter feed. Should I go back and
scroll
through that?
Yeah, it's on the Track Athletics Twitter or on the Instagram page as well.
Nice. I'll go check it out. Speaking of goals and scoring, you personally are in a little bit of a slump. You haven't scored a goal in a season and a half now after you got two in 2017. Seriously, you do have actually six assists this year through eight games. That was very fun a couple of years ago when you got those goals. You must have enjoyed let's talk about them for a moment. You must have enjoyed those moments, getting a chance to just let it rip at the far end.
Yeah, I mean, I guess each one was a little different. the first goal against Buffalo the previous year, I actually just mentioned this on a different podcast yesterday. We were 0-5 or something, and I think we were going for our first win. So we were up a few goals against Buffalo, and it was just one of those things where I just didn't really have an outlet pass, and I just wanted to ensure we were going to finally get our first win. So I just kind of threw it straight, and it went in. And then, so that obviously I was pretty excited about that one, more so the fact that at that point was kind of when we knew we were going to – finally get in the win column. But the two the next year, I think, again, like I think it's just kind of with the rules and then all, like, you know, late in the game, if they have an empty net and I don't really have an outlet pass right away, then I don't have much time to get it out of my crease or to get it over half. So if I don't really have somebody open right away, then I kind of have to make a quick decision. And in both those scenarios, I think I just quickly decided to throw it at the net, and they both just happened to bounce in. So yeah, I haven't really been looking or worried about trying to get another one, but yeah, you never know, I guess.
You never know. I did mention you've got six assists through eight games. The most you've had in a season is eight. You've had each of the last 2 years, and I'm wondering if that is a reflection of an intentional effort by the team, by the coaching staff, to kind of crank up the transition chances, or is it just that it's just been working out with some of the, obviously we've got some terrific transition guys. You mentioned Challen Rogers. I mean, Damon Edwards, Brock Sorensen's been running very well this year. You got a bunch of guys who can go and be on the other end of an outlet pass to try and do something.
Yeah, no, I think definitely transition has to be a part of our identity. And I'm not really trying to do too much different in the, I guess, transition game or making outlet passes. I have been trying to kind of put the ball on to guys a bit quicker. I mean, I think for a long time, myself and a lot of goalies kind of figured, like, the long bomb is kind of how you have to do it. But I think this year I've been fortunate to kind of get it in my stick and get it out pretty quick to a D guy like Challen or Billy or Brock or those guys, where it's not too long of a pass. They can kind of get in their stick and just make a decision, and it's been working out as far as us capitalizing. So I think that's probably the only difference for me this year, but our guys have been doing a heck of a job in transition all season.
The defensive unit in front of you, I mean, you've got Bruce Cause in his third season now as the D coach, and during that time, there's actually been quite a bit of turnover. It seemed kind of gradual, and I think Jamie Dawich managed it pretty well, so it didn't seem sudden or overwhelming. But then you look and you realize in the last couple of years, you've had Brody Merrill, Sandy Chapman, Jeff Gilbert, Jesse Gamble, and Patrick Merrill have all either retired or left for various reasons. That's, you know, that's half a defensive unit full of real veterans and real leaders. And the young group, it feels like this year, it feels like last year it was starting to come together, but this year it really feels like you've kind of found your stride as a defensive unit, you and that whole group, working with Bruce Codd, getting familiar with what he wants you to do, and guys stepping up into bigger roles.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything, I guess not, there's not much to say about Bruce that probably hasn't already been said. He's an exceptional coach. He's very, very personable, and he's a player's coach where he communicates his message well. And our guys have reacted, obviously, extremely well this season to that. And I do think we've had quite a bit of turnover the last few years, but all the guys that are our leaders have been around, and I think we're able to learn from some of those older guys that may have retired or gone elsewhere or whatever reason. But I do think that guys are just stepping up, and maybe that's just a gradual development of some of our players. But yeah, the defense this year has been maybe one of the best units I've played behind, and I have no problem saying that because they have been playing lights out in front of me.
We mentioned Bruce Codd. I have a ton of respect for Bruce Codd as well. I think he's a tremendous coach. I've seen his work as a head coach with the Junior B and now Junior A Orangeville Northmen, and obviously doing a great job with you guys. And I'm wondering, with Brandon Miller now coming in as a goalie coach after he retired, how does it work with, you know, with a D coach and a goalie coach? Obviously, during practices, as a goalie, you're going to be doing a lot of your work will be focused on what the D coach or the head coach are doing, because you're working with the full defensive unit. But when, how does the breakdown work? When does Brandon Miller get his opportunity to work with you and Riley Hutchcraft, your backup?
Yeah, I mean, with B, besides him dressing for games, not much has changed, to be honest with you. He is very good at doing video and recognizing what maybe a few things where I can improve, and where guys on other goalies can shoot. I think he's really helped our offense and to kind of pick out these little tendencies by other goalies, and I think that's been actually very underrated, where people probably don't realize that a goalie coach may be able to actually help the offense of a team. But he's been great in that regard. And then we do some little goalie drills in practice each week, just to kind of do a refresher on a few things. But overall, yeah, besides him just actually not suiting up for games, not a ton has changed between our relationship, to be honest.
Now, especially with Brandon Miller not playing anymore, you played every minute this season, playing a pretty heavy load. You've actually, the last couple of years, with Brandon having some injuries and whatnot, you've played all but basically one game each of the last 2 years as well. You're pretty comfortable running out every night? Or, I mean, it's going to happen when you've got a young backup like Riley Hutchcraft still working into his career. He just finished junior this last summer. Are you happy to go out and play every minute as long as you're needed?
Yeah, I mean, I just think that's the end of all. That's the league we have is teams, for the most part, kind of have to have a guy. And I don't think there's too many goalie by committees in the NHL right now, and if any. And I like playing, so I love the game of lacrosse. I'm gonna play as long as I guess still doing my job. And I want to play every minute. And that's a little selfish, I guess. But I got no problem going out each and every week. And to be honest with you, when we're playing one game, pretty well one game a week, it's not as taxing as people might think. Like, you have a few days recovery after the game, and then you start to prepare for the next weekend. So I seem to be all right with it. And as long as the coaches keep putting me out there, I'll be ready.
And, I mean, you turned 31 just over a week ago. So belated happy birthday.
Thank you.
You bet. And that's really the prime for a goalie. They often talk about goalies not really hitting their peak. Usually till 26, 27, 28 is often where it seems to work out. And that seems to hold for you that's when you really just took the reins and really started having some really consistent performances, which is what happens with so many goalies. And now at 31, you seem like you're very confident. You've developed, you've figured out the way that you need to play, how far back you can be, how much you can come out, how you can adjust, what your style is. I mean, very much a blocker style with some maybe surprising athleticism, because you do tend to get your spot and be comfortable that you've got your position. But when you have to move, you move. Why is it that for you and so many goalies, it seems to be as you get further into your career than with runners that you hit your prime?
I don't know. There's probably quite a few factors. Obviously, when a goalie first breaks into the NHL, they've been playing most likely Junior A, which is a lot smaller nets and pretty well a lot bigger equipment. And sticks and all that kind of stuff. So it does take an adjustment period. I remember my first training camp. I kind of walked out on the turf and I might have been a little unprepared for how big the net actually felt out there. I just think it's like anything in life, you obviously get better with experience, and that's kind of what happens with goalies. And I do think it obviously takes more time than players, just because it's a bit more unique of a position. But I've been fortunate enough to play behind a lot of great goalies in the NHL and in my career, and I've learned a lot from those guys on how to obviously play my style and learn some guys' tendencies over the years as well. Also helps too. So I don't know the exact reason for that, but I think that's kind of what's happened for me.
I think that was pretty well phrased. And I've talked to a number of goalies and heard goalies saying, when you come out of junior or even summer senior box lacrosse and you get those NLL nets or 3 inches wider, you would think, oh, what's 3 inches in the nature of things? But when your whole game has been based on, if I'm standing here, I'm on this post. If I can go here, I've got the far side covered, knowing those things. And then all of a sudden you have that position, and there's the entire width of a ball in a little bit that is open if you have that same position. And the guys in this league are going to pick that because they're so good. That's a huge change, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like anything, like if the NHL added 3 inches to their nets, then you would probably, there would be some high scoring goals. So like, I just think with anything with change, it makes a huge difference. And my first year, I was actually coming off, I think the year before I went in the NHL draft, we had the 4x4 nets in junior A. So I went to a net that added essentially 9 inches. So that obviously made it extremely tough. And there were some times in Boston where I was seeing a lot of rubber and just trying to get a little piece of some of those guys' shots because it was an extreme difference for me. But, yeah, I think that definitely plays into everything.
I want to turn to something that I know is demanding a lot of your mental and emotional energy these days. You're an avowed and devoted Pittsburgh Steelers fan. Anyone who follows your Instagram is well aware of it. The Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown situations must be a little challenging at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know what to say about that, to be honest with you. I love both those guys as players for the Steelers, but obviously there's an issue where their character isn't quite up to the standard of the Steelers organization, and I think when that happens, it is time to kind of probably move on from those guys. And those are obviously two players that you can't really replace, but just to get the locker room back in order. And the other thing is people kind of try and chirp me a little bit about it. But I'm actually not too rattled about it. I just think that it is time to move on from both of them. And the fact of the matter is we haven't won anything with them. So if that's the case and they're acting the way they are, I guess for lack of a better word, like a couple of babies, then it's probably time to just get rid of them and see what we can do next year. And I still like our team besides them, but yeah, it's this past NFL season was a little tough. Yeah.
I've seen your posts, and I saw you put a post out a while ago about Brown, and it just made me think of that. And honestly, I feel your pain. I've been a Broncos fan for a long time, and Denver just traded for, or will officially trade for once the league year officially begins, quarterback Joe Flacco, and I am very ambivalent about 2019 Joe Flacco coming to try and win the Super Bowl in Denver as well.
Our owner, Jamie, he's a huge Broncos fan, and he seems to be a bit happier about that than Case Keenum. So not that it's a huge upgrade, but I think Jamie kind of remembers what Flacco did to the Broncos up in Mile High not too long ago. So he seems to be living a dream that may be able to happen again, I think.
I believe that was the 2013 playoffs, the Jacoby Jones touchdown pass, the 70-yarder to tie it up. In the final couple minutes, that was crushing for all of us in Bronco Nation.
Yeah, for sure. And I think we were actually they showed that on a Jumbotron when we were out for first warm up somewhere. We were somewhere, and I remember kind of looking over in the stands, and Jamie was just hand on his face, I believe.
I bet he was. That was not a happy moment, Broncos fan.
Yeah.
Turn back to lacrosse for just to wrap things up. You guys have 8 of your next 9 games are against East Division teams. You've got New England coming up, and then Calgary, the lone Western club, and then 7 straight within the East. Obviously, huge games whenever you have those division battles. And what's the thought process going forward to try and keep this roll going?
Yeah, I mean, not to be too cliche, but we're not really looking ahead. We know that we got a tough test this Sunday in New England, and that has to be our focus. And that's what's worked for us this season, is I don't think we've looked ahead at all. And I obviously, to comment on that, with seven East games left, that kind of even more hammers home the point that we haven't really done anything yet. Like if we were to go on a, like, obviously, if we lose 4 or 5 of those in a row, we're maybe looking at on the outside in. So we need to focus each week and keep doing what we're doing and find ways to win close games. Hopefully we can win a couple that aren't a one-goal game, but if that's how we have to do it, we'll take it. But, right now our focus is strictly on New England.
Yeah, obviously they're more a little more pleasant. Maybe we can get up by a few goals, but I guess a win is a win at the end of the season. Doesn't really matter how. Like they always say, don't ask how, just how many.
Yeah, exactly. That's our thought process as well.
Rosie, appreciate your time. It's always great getting a chance to chat, and good having you on the show.
All right, thanks a lot, Stanford.
All right, that'll wrap things up for this episode of Voxel Beat on NLL Radio, also available on iTunes via Inside Lacrosse Podcasts. I'm Stephen Samp, your host and an editor at ilindoor.com. Go there for all the best NLL coverage on the internet. Thank you so much, lacrosse friends, for being with me once again. And thanks to terrific guests Reggie Thorpe and Nick Rose for making this a super episode of Voxel Beat on NLL Radio. We'll see you next time.